You're listening to SBS News.
A new report has calculated how much annual climate finance is needed to flow from rich nations to Pacific countries. The funds would help speed up the energy transition, address climate impacts, and deal with climate-related loss and damage. The report by Caritas Australia and the Jubilee Australia Research Centre finds that around $1.5 billion is needed annually to meet the climate finance needs for Pacific nations. The current gap in finance is calculated to be two-thirds of that amount, $1 billion. I spoke with report co-author Damien Spruce from Caritas Australia about the report's findings, as world leaders at COP29 negotiate a deal for a new climate finance target to replace the existing one that expires next year.
Well, we wanted to see exactly how much climate finance is needed in the Pacific in order to make sure that Pacific communities can withstand the effects of climate change and that they don't have to move out of their homes, they don't have to leave their countries. And what we found was that even though the IMF and World Bank and the countries themselves have estimated that the amount is about $1.5 billion in total, they're only receiving $0.4 billion. So that's around $1 billion in shortfall for what the Pacific needs in order to deal with climate change.
And the focus in particular on loss and damage, why was that something that you wanted to hone in on?
Look, it's really important that the Pacific community get money to be able to repair their infrastructure, their houses, their schools, as tropical storms hit, as desalination and land loss and beach loss hit. We need to make sure that that loss and damage that they're suffering is properly compensated for.
This COP, it's being called the Finance COP. What is its significance in terms of what's at stake here? What the question or the issue, the primary issue that needs to be resolved?
Well, we need to make sure that the developed world is properly supporting the developing world and the most vulnerable communities and countries in climate change by ensuring that there is enough climate finance flowing to help them adapt, to help them mitigate, and to help compensate for loss and damage. Now, at the moment, there's a $100 billion aim which has been achieved, but we know that the estimates of the climate finance needs around the world are $1 trillion at the moment. So that's a tenth of what's needed. So we need countries to step up, be delivering a more ambitious goal for climate finance. And we need to make sure that it's actually good quality climate finance, that it's delivered as grants and not as loans that will just increase the debt levels of the global south and lead to ongoing economic disasters.
As you say there, the trillions, I mean, that's different to the billion that the report outlines. How difficult has it been to just narrow in on putting a figure on this area of loss and damage in particular?
Well, what we've done is we've taken detailed studies from countries themselves from around the Pacific as they have done their analysis. And we've also looked at the hard-headed analyses of the IMF and the World Bank about what countries need to do in order to prepare themselves for climate change. That might mean building seawalls, planting mangroves to stop sea incursions, might mean having detailed migration plans to allow people to move and migrate with dignity. And so we've taken that analysis carefully and we've come up with these figures for the Pacific, and they align with the broader civil society analyses of the trillions that are needed worldwide.
The rich nations haven't put any suggestion of a figure forward on what they'd like the new climate finance target to be in terms of the quantum. There is a sense that it will come in far less than what the developing countries are asking for. What's your sense of it on the ground, the current environment for a more optimistic and ambitious figure when we talk about getting on the higher end of that?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm hearing a range of rumours on the ground at this early stage of negotiations. Some are lowballing it and saying, $200 billion might be possible, but $300 is a stretch, but nowhere near the $1 trillion. But others are saying that $500 million is possible, so at least half the amount.
You know, what is really important also is we need good quality of climate finance. So one of the things that civil society has been warning about here is that We need to make sure that the climate finance is delivered in a way that is going to be beneficial and sustainable for countries, not as debt that is going as loans, which are going to create greater economic uncertainty and risk. So in some ways, it's better to have a reasonable amount of climate finance as long as it's delivered in a high-quality, grants-based way. What we don't want to see is a very large figure for climate finance that gets delivered by the private sector, not by governments, and therefore gets delivered in ways that that creates debt and economic ill effects.
In terms of the impact of the US election and Donald Trump, a known climate skeptic who says he wants to reactivate a plan to exit the Paris Agreement and also the underlying framework underpinning the Paris Agreement, he wants to exit that too. What's your read on the direction of the talks by the world leaders who are there in Baku?
It's really putting a fire under everybody here at Baku, and people are pulling together and realizing that if we're not going to have the US going forward, everybody else needs to be doing 100%, 200% more. So we know that, you know, a lot of the climate action, the emissions reductions that's happening in the US is happening at a state level. We know California has a huge emissions reduction program. So there are ways that the US will still continue to deliver its obligations at the state level, even if the federal level has withdrawn from the climate agreement. But we all know that we need to keep the momentum up, to keep climate action going, especially in the face of the results of the US election.
In terms of the pledges for the Loss and Damage Fund, I think it's $700 million, nowhere near what developing nations had sought or were expecting. And the Australian government had indicated they were more confident in investing the money in other mechanisms other than the Loss and Damage Fund. What conversations have you had maybe with the Australian delegation on the ground there, led by Chris Bowen? The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, is not in Baku, about the specific actions they could be taking when it comes to loss and damage.
Well, look, we've said Minister Bowen has had the honour of being appointed as one of the ministerial pair on climate finance this year, and so is in charge of getting all world leaders together to come up with a really strong and ambitious climate finance result. So Australia needs to be pulling its weight there, and it hasn't yet made a contribution to the Loss and Damage Fund. And we've been emphasising to the delegation and to the government the importance of walking the talk on climate finance and making that contribution if he's going to be, if he's going to use his authority to try to get other governments to come in and support climate finance too.
Australia and the Pacific nations have a bid to co-host the COP31. There's a rival bid from Turkey, but commentators are saying that Australia does really have a strong chance. What's your take there on whether that bid may be affected by how the Australian delegation, the Australian government, represents itself on this issue of climate finance and loss and damage?
The Pacific governments, Pacific civil society and us in support have been telling the Australian government that if it's going to get COP31, it really needs to be putting its money where its mouth is and to be making a significant contribution to climate finance and to the Pacific, which we haven't seen happen yet. We know that the Turkey is hosting some, Pacific countries as they in some of their events here, and is reaching out and engaging. So the Australia really needs to step up and show that it's serious about these issues, and not just expect that it can sleepwalk towards a COP31 hosting.
Other people are trying to put a more optimistic cast to the stepping back of the US, saying, well, there seems to be a lot of forward momentum already, suggesting that countries and clean energy sector are going to stay the course. What role do you see here for private investment to maybe fill the gap that the US has left here?
Look, there is already a large amount of private investment being mobilised in the global north in mitigation effects. And there is, some role as for mitigation and for developing new renewable energies for private sector investment. But really, we need to look at the important role that government investment continues to play, and that is needed for real climate adaptation and real sustainable climate financing.
Some Pacific nations like PNG had earlier said that they weren't going to send any delegation at all, but the Prime Minister's not attending, but they have sent a smaller delegation, around 100 world leaders at the COP talks. So it's been criticised as maybe just being a talk fest. What are the real prospects, from your view, of getting a good outcome here?
Look, there are real dangers that this might be a COP where no real results come out, and that would be absolutely devastating, especially in the light of the election. So it's up to all countries, but particularly to the richer developing world, and Australia plays a big role here with Chris Bowen's position as a ministerial pair, to push hard and to show real commitment and to give more than they were expecting to give. Papua New Guinea has shown its distress and its worry about COP not delivering, and isn't here this year. And I think that's a real sign to the global north, to Australia and others, that it has to make these COPs really deliver, or it's going to lose that consensus that we got with the Paris Agreement, where all the world was working together towards limiting heat rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius.